Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Hello, and welcome to Namaste Radio. I am your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be continuing our discussion from a couple of weeks ago. We were speaking with Ron Garner. He is the author of Conscious Health, and we'll be continuing the series on health today as well as next week. Now, Ron Garner is an educator. He has a Bachelor of Education, a Master of Science degree, and a Diploma in Natural Health. He's a health researcher, educator, author, and speaker. And for a major part of his life, he worked in the public school system in Canada, where he held positions as teacher, principal, deputy superintendent in BC, and he also served as the regional superintendent of schools in the Yukon Territory. And his own search for health solutions has convinced him that the human body is a miraculous self-healer if it's given the support it requires to build and maintain health. So we are going to be talking about how you can consciously build and maintain your health. Now, the last time we spoke with Ron, we discussed the first three keys. He has five keys to living a conscious, healthy life in his book, Conscious Health, The Complete Owner's Natural Health and Healing Manual. And so far, we've covered learning, cleansing, most of feeding. We're going to talk a little bit about feeding today. Believing and implementing are the two main keys that we're going to talk about today. So the five keys are learning, cleansing, feeding, believing, and implementing. And today we're going to focus mainly on believing and implementing. So I'm very excited to have Ron Garner back on the show. Thank you so much for being with us, Ron. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Great to be here again.
Thank you for being with us. I hear an echo.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Is that any better?
Nope. Okay, so we'll
doesn't
just continue
seem to be there
on.
When we were talking on the phone before.
Okay, well, anyway, let's just continue.
Are you getting it on the radio?
I don't listen on the radio. I listen through the phone.
Okay.
Do you have your radio on?
No, there's no radio on.
Okay, that's all right. We'll just continue with the interview. So, Ron, last time we spoke, we ended with the five main food poisons. Now, let's first touch a little bit on learning and cleansing. Now, the first key is learning. A great way to do that is to start with your book, Conscious Health.
Yeah, that's true. By learning, I'm actually trying to cover an understanding of how the body operates and why it breaks down to disease and what it needs, you know, to reverse that and to be healthy. And the cleansing, of course, is part of that, but over time, when we're eating poorly, living in polluted environments under too much stress, etc., our body becomes overloaded with toxins, and it actually runs out of supplies to be able to keep us healthy. It loses its efficiency. And one interesting question I like to put to people in this regard is, what is hunger? Can you tell me what hunger is? Well, it's more than just, hey, my tummy wants to be filled. Hunger is actually your body's cry for nutrition. And to illustrate that, you know, we've all had Thanksgiving dinner and turkey and Christmas and stuff and just stuffed ourselves. You know, in a half an hour later, you're out picking around for more food, and yet your tummy is extended. Well, what that's an example of is your body didn't get food it could use, so it's sending you up to try to find some nutrition. It's kind of a comical way to look at it. But basically, you know, your body has two priorities. The first one is survival. It'll do anything to try to keep you alive today so you'll see tomorrow. But the second one is to improve health. And that's where, you know, your consciousness of what is good for us, what's bad for us, listening to your body, what is it telling you, will help us get onto that path.
Wonderful. And then the second key that we spoke about last week, or last time we spoke, is
the cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
The cleansing, and that basically, if we pay attention to our colon, to making sure that, you know, we are having two or three normal bowel movements every day, if that colon is kept clean and functioning properly, then the internal organs like the liver and the kidneys, and that they're able to empty themselves and keep clean too. But if we get plugged up in that lower end, it just backs up into the system. So cleansing really focuses on that, and that really comes back to the good kinds of food that we need to eat with enough fiber in them. So we're sort of being brief here because we've covered that.
So I have a question about cleansing. Because what about people who eat plenty of fiber and they're still only having one bowel movement a day? What does that mean?
It could mean two or three things. That the number one thing is you can't flush a toilet without enough water. So we all need to drink more water. Most of us are guilty of not having enough water, and so it becomes sticky and dry. That's usually the main aspect there. Now, under situations of extreme stress, of course, we can tighten up as well if it's ongoing.
So my concern is, what about people? Because everybody's body is a little bit different. I mean, we, of course, have the ideal that we shoot for, and everyone needs X amount of calories a day to survive. But everyone has comes in different shapes and sizes. Everyone has different cycles to their body. And so what about people who are having plenty of fiber, eating really healthy, drinking tons and tons of water, like 2+ liters a day, and they're not going 3 times a day?
Well, then maybe as long as, you know, they are not intaking the so-called bad foods, drinking, you know, a lot of coffee, alcohol, and all that sort of stuff, if they're having one good, normal bowel movement a day, which is not painful, it's not hard to do, then perhaps that's okay for them. But a general rule is for every substantial meal you have, there should be one bowel movement. Now, on the other hand, Marie, there are people who are of a nervous temperament who might have 5 and 6 a day. You know, so the nerves come into play here, too.
Okay, that's an excellent point. And so let's just go over. We ended the last show with the 5 white food poisons. Can you just give us a quick overview of those?
Sure. That's just a minute. I'm moving down on my presentation here to get to that. That's basically 5 white food poisons are sugar. And that's bad no matter which way you face it. Food is one of our worst foods. Table salt, now that's different than sea salt that has been dried and not heated. So sugar, table salt, white flour, white rice. Now those four have no nutrition in them, extremely little nutrition, because white flour and white rice have been processed. Their fiber, their kernels, the bran part has been taken out. And the fifth one is pasteurized dairy, which is a white. Now you'll say, well, whoa. Hold on, you know, meat and cheese is good for us, isn't it? Yes, but when it's pasteurized, it's been superheated. And what we explained before in our earlier session was that when food is subjected to a high heat, such as pasteurization, it kills the enzymes which are in there to help break the food down naturally, and it also binds the amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein. And so once those are bound, the body can't use them. So we're getting very little nutrition out of them, and it's probably harder on the body than it is easier on it. Now, in certain states, such as California, in certain areas, they're allowed to have raw milk under certain circumstances, allowed to sell raw milk under certain circumstances. Now, if that is processed with all aspects of cleanliness, see, it's a raw product. So the enzymes are there, the amino acids are available. Now, you don't have to just pick on dairy. You look at any food, and that applies to it too. Once it's overheated to a certain extent, then and for as far as enzymes are concerned, that's about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not too hot, too high. Then the enzymes are killed, and a little higher than that, then the amino acids are bound. They cannot combine into forms that are needed within different protein forms that are needed within the bodies for building purposes.
And so, Ron, it's interesting. It sounds like what you're saying is that when food is processed and heated above 110 degrees Fahrenheit, that it essentially just kills the life and the nutrients.
Well, it does kill the life and the nutrients, but not all of them. You know, the body gets what it can out of it, but we're talking about complete nutrition here. You know, and so a good portion of it is made unavailable. So that is why it's not only an excellent idea, it's really absolutely important that we have enough raw food with our meals on a regular basis when we eat. We should put the salads and the raw food on our plate first and then add on some of the cooked food.
Okay, excellent. So let's now talk about the leaf because that is a huge part of having optimum health.
The beliefs. Yes, right. Now, the mind is an amazing thing. We have our conscious mind, which is, you know, where our thoughts are. We think we know what we're talking about. And of course, there's a subconscious mind. So our beliefs are actually so powerful that what we're believing, what we're thinking, this creates our health and our happiness in our lives. If we dwell on unhappy things, we become unhappy. We are unhappy. But further than that, going down further, what causes problems for us is the beliefs we hold in our subconscious mind, you know, whether those are positive or negative, begin to be affected or reflected in our life circumstances. So complete health, to get to there, is achieved through awareness, being aware of what we're thinking, what we're believing, what we're feeling. And it's recognizing who we are now in the process of who we want to become. You know, and that's a lot easier said than done. And I speak about that from personal experience. But the truth of it are backed up by so many other researchers. Dr. David Hawkins wrote an excellent book called Power versus Force. You know, and he had a quote in his book that says, "Every disease is a reflection of a false belief system within us." Now, that is a huge statement. You know, but going back to Namaste's authors and books, Ivan Rados talks excellently about that actual fact and explains why it would happen in his book, Health. It's all about consciousness. It's about being consciousness. So these belief systems we have within us, our bodies are talking to us. And he says a disease process is evidence that something is amiss in the workings of the mind. And that's where the power to affect lasting change resides. Interesting and powerful statements.
So, Ron, I'm curious, sorry to interrupt you, but I've heard some spiritual teachers say that you could eat, I don't know, rocks or whatever, and if you believed that that was going to nourish you, that you would still be healthy.
I have heard that, too. I'm not there, I'll have to admit it. And I'm not about to do it because, you know, I do have a bit of a bias in believing that our body is made to function in a certain way, and I understand how it's to be nourished. And I think by feeding our body just rocks or just sand is not going to satisfy the nutritional needs of the body. That's where I'm coming from, as well as believing and understanding that the mind has a terrific influence, because if you're worried or if you're in fear, just think of what that does to the feeling in the pit of your stomach, and whether you feel like eating, and whether you feel like being happy, or even can avoid not feeling sick. So the mind, our thoughts, what we think's happening, not necessarily what's happening, has a tremendous influence on us. You know, Dr. Bruce Lipton has proved that in his book, The Biology of Belief, that our cells are also controlled by our mind. And I mentioned perception. You know, the extent of our awareness of what is really going on in a situation, and it's not necessarily what is true, but what we think is true, what we believe is true. That's important, because when our minds believe something to be true, this causes our bodies to respond accordingly and make it happen. I again give the example of fear. You know, if you happen to go on a holiday out in the woods, and you're living in a little cabin that has just a little light door on it, and you hear this noise outside, and it's nighttime, and you're convinced that it's a big bear wandering around, and matter of fact, you hear scratches and bumps at the door, what happens to your body? Now, it could be just your partner who had gone and you didn't expect them back for 2 or 3 hours, but did come back earlier and was trying to find the door to get in. But your perception didn't go there and caused that huge fear to happen. And just think of what that does to your body. Because, you know, our first instinct is survival. We want to survive and we want to be safe. But on the other hand here, that our minds can heal our bodies, you know, is now becoming a proven reality in so many cases. And you know, the most ordinary, medically oriented one probably is the placebo effect. There are many studies that say, talk about the placebo effect of doctors giving patients a sugar pill, and in 35 to 40% of the cases, you know, they tend to get better. I could list, there's two or three studies that are kind of interesting. In the 2002 study in the New England Journal of Medicine, they took patients with very serious knee pain. They divided them into three groups. And in one group, they actually went in, opened up, and shaved the damaged cartilage. They laid them down. They didn't let the patients see what they were doing, but they told them. They said, you know, we're going in here. So they went into the knee, and they actually scraped and shaved off the damaged cartilage and knit them up again, sewed them up. Second group, they did the same thing as if they were doing, and they flushed out the knee of material. So there were a few pieces of cartilage maybe floating around in there. So they flushed it out with water, sewed it up again. The third group, they pretended they were doing both of those things. They opened it up, and then they pretended they were doing these things, and then they sewed them up. The conclusion after that was the placebo group improved just as much as the other two groups. That's amazing. You know, that was in a medical study. But that, obviously, the mind thought that was happening, therefore expected the results. And accordingly, the body then followed to get better. Really, really interesting studies. Another study of patients with cancer with chemotherapy, and they took the group, and some people they gave, told them they were giving them chemotherapy, and because they know that one of the results of doing chemotherapy is hair loss, about 30% of those people in the control group that were given placebos, they lost their hair. So
they,
you know,
expected it.
Pardon?
Because they expected it. They believed so strongly.
Well, they did. So the mind then took over and instructed the body accordingly. And, you know, Bruce Lipton in his book said it really disturbs the pharmaceutical manufacturers that in most of their clinical trials, the placebos and fake drugs proved just as effective as the engineered chemical cocktails. kind of funny. But, again, the power of the mind. Dr. Hans Selye, he's no longer alive, but he was the father of stress research, a real forerunner in that. And he told us that it's our perception of the situation which determines how stressed or how threatened we feel. If we think bad things are going to happen, boy, the stress level really goes up. And what's stressful to one person is not necessarily to another. We all know how different people react. So this all has to do with our beliefs or what we think is true. A belief doesn't really mean it is. It means only that we think it is. So, but, you know, we can take responsibility when we become aware of how we are thinking, how we are listen to our thoughts. You know, Eckhart Tolle's book, In the Power of Now, In a New Earth, and even Michael Brown's, where you get into listening to what is our mind saying. When you start to meditate, you know, we are supposed to blank and come right into the now moment. But thoughts flow in and out, thoughts flow in and out. And when you get good enough about it, as Eckhart says, you know, we become the observer of the thoughts because we are not those thoughts. They come from our mind, and our mind is just a tool. So we need to come to a point of peace. When I first started studying natural health, I studied under the teaching of Dr. Joel Robbins in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the College of Natural Health. And he made a statement I always remembered. He said, you know, if you've got an attitude problem, you're not going to get rid of your physical problem. Again, it's reinforcing the same thing. We have to get down the base. As we have to cleanse our body, we need to cleanse our mind too, because our thoughts are creative. What we think about has an effect on our body. So we end up creating what happens to us.
And so it's interesting that people create these illnesses way back in, what, the 70s? I think Louise Hay came out with her book, You Can Heal Your Life. And
yes.
I'm sure it's not every problem connects with the exact same thought for everyone, but there are certain illnesses like cancer is often triggered by fear and anger.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's just recalling, I think one of the studies on cancer is from the New German approach to cancer. It's called the New German Medicine or something, and it's basically that. It's going back into the thoughts, and that's how to get at healing the cancer. Ivan Rados does that, or did that in his practice, and that's what he talks about. Once we cleanse those thoughts that are blocking the energy flows in our body from the seven energy centers in our body so that the energy starts to move freely, then the body is free to heal again. The energy moves. It's only when we have blocked energy, in the sense of the electrical energy in the body, thought energy, feeling energy, or if we have blockages, that's probably no difference than when we have blockages in our body, blockages in our colon, blockages in circulation. They are parallel, the same sort of thing.
So it sounds like what you're saying, because you last time we spoke, we talked about diverticulitis and blockages in the colon and what happens when you don't take care of your bodily functions, you hold them in during a meeting or something like that. And so do you think that that's the same kind of thing that we do mentally, holding things in?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, I do. You know, and I speak from personal experience. It's painful when you realize these things about yourself. All of a sudden, you know, you're feeling anxious, fearful, uncertain. And then if you can pause long enough to recognize what your thoughts are, you're blocked at that certain point, at those certain thoughts. And therefore, you are maintaining and sustaining and continuing that kind of stress, which has an effect on your body. And we need to calm. We need to get that energy moving through again. Even though the situation may be somewhat real, we need to work through it rather than be frozen. Because, you know, from all the books on the law of attraction, which were all the rage here 2-3 years ago, basically say, you know, we attract into our life what we think about most and how we feel. Because when we think about thoughts that bother us, doesn't matter whether that's turmoil within the home, in relationships, whether it's on the job, wherever. The thoughts we have cause us to feel certain ways, either positively or negatively. The positive thoughts are building happiness. The negative thoughts are immediately binding. You know, when we get fearful, one of the words is, you know, we're uptight. Well, literally it is. You know, we constrict. And so that stops circulation of energy in whatever form we have. Because, and from a more nutritional look at it, which I talk a lot about in my book, negative thoughts are acid-producing. Negative, fearful thoughts, these all overly produce acid, and they lower the pH level in our body. And if you lower it far enough for long enough, then oxygen cannot be produced in the cells, at least in certain areas of the body, in an efficient manner, and it drops down to low levels of oxygen where fermentation begins to take place because the body has to produce some, and that's the environment in which cancer can form. So negative thoughts are acid-producing and disease-producing, therefore, and positive thoughts are actually alkaline-producing and health-producing, because we need to have a certain level, very near neutral, alkaline environment for the cells in our body. Our blood always maintains an alkaline level about 7.365, and if that drops very far, we die. But this is, we're talking now about how beliefs and how we feel in our body can change that. You know, there was a very interesting number of studies and two or three books by Dr. Masaru Emoto. Did you hear about him?
Yes, he did the water crystals.
He did the water crystals. And he came to a conclusion that, you know, water is a mirror reflecting our mind because it receives energy. I could just run through two or three examples. What Dr. Masaru Emoto did in Japan, he got to wondering, what's the difference between when you look at water under a microscope, of polluted water and clean water? Well, he tried that, and he couldn't see anything really different. So then he froze the water and looked at the crystals, and then he found that they formed different patterns. So one example, he had a polluted dam water from a dam area in Japan, and it just looked like, I don't know, I could describe it as a desert sand with cracks and grooves in it, and it did not look like water. Then he took that dam water after he had a group of monks praying around. He took a sample, and he had monks praying around that water. I don't know for how long it was. Then froze that water, and then looked at the crystals, and it's the most beautiful six-sided crystal you could see. You know, it's not as pristine, as clear as pristine glacial water, but it starts to take a structure on again. He found the same thing happened when they took water and told it, you make me sick or I'll kill you. Well, the water just looks like yuck. It looks like paste. On the other hand, when they took that same water and told it, thank you, I appreciate you, I love you, and then they froze it and looked at the crystals, the crystals come out as fine as a lovely piece of jewelry. He absolutely demonstrated that water picks up energy. And so, you know, when we internalize that, we are, what, 70 to 80% water ourselves in our body? If we are living in an environment, in a house or a work environment, which is always negative, put down, etc., think about what that's doing to the water crystals in our body, to the energy. They're becoming constricted. That was really, really interesting.
So, Ron, it's interesting that you mentioned the living in a house with negative energy, because sometimes when you walk into a room where people have been had a fight or have been just kind of negative people, you can feel the energy different.
Certainly you can, because our bodies, we are sentient beings when we practice that, especially when we, the more clear we become in our own thoughts and understand our own body. Yes, you can feel it. You often hear the expression, wow, what's going on in here? You can cut the air with a knife. You know, it is tense. And there's no doubt about it. You can feel it. So how does this happen? Well, let's go through a little explanation of that. Everything in the universe is electric. Everything. There's nothing solid. We think it's solid, but everything is electricity, and it's revolving at different vibrations. And so everything is an expression of energy, even solid matter. All things can communicate at the cellular level because of their electromagnetic nature. And most of us are conscious of our physical body, but many of us aren't conscious of our energetic body. That is, that our body has energy. And that's what Ivan Radov tries to get at in his book, The Energetic Body. It's electromagnetic, and we have to allow that to work properly, too, and smoothly. But because our thoughts are also electromagnetic, that's why you said you can feel this, that's where you're picking it up. These energies are able to really affect our energetic body. And the key to what we're creating is the words we use, as well as the intent and belief we have.
But Ron, you mentioned earlier the law of attraction craze, and a lot of people, you know, they're told, okay, so you need to think positively. If you think negatively, bad things are going to happen to you. If you think good thoughts, good things will happen. So what tends to happen is that people will have an argument or a disagreement, or there'll be something negative that they experience or perceive. And then they'll say, okay, I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to watch happy movies. I'm going to pet a dog. I'm going to feel good. So they're kind of ignoring those negative feelings, but they're not really clearing them. So they're just kind of like we talked about, holding it in.
Exactly. They're suppressing it, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be looked at for what it really is, and worked through that. Things have to be worked through. We have to move. Energy has to move. So we need to move from anger, criticism, fear, and resentment to, we can't just forget it, but we have to deal with it, see it for what it is. If we simply can't cope with it, you know, Eckhart Tolle says, in any situation, you have three choices. One, you can try to change it. Let's talk about relationship in a home. You can try to change it. Well, we know we can't change the other person. We can only change ourselves. Or number two, you can totally accept it. Say, all right, fine, that's the way it is. I'm just going to live it. And it will not bother me at all. And now if you can live with that, then that's fine. So you can try to change it. You can accept it. If you can't do either of those and you still can't live with it, the only other choice is to remove yourself from the situation. That's what Eckhart explained in The Power of Now. And that was very interesting to me. But to get back to how do we move away from the anger, fears, resentment and stuff, we have to look in and start to get to the clearing aspects of acceptance and forgiveness, gratitude and love. And forgiveness is probably the largest ones there, because we need to forgive others, but first of all, we have to forgive ourselves. We cannot move unless we forgive ourselves, because that leaves us stuck. Right?
And so, Ron, do you focus on that in your book, Conscious Health, or do you recommend reading some of the other Namaste books to be able to get to that point?
No, I do talk about that, but there's lots of books you can read about it. One of the things I tried to do in Conscious Health was to summarize the main and best of what I could find in other books by other teachers. Try to present the whole picture there. You know, nothing under the sun is an original thought from anyone. We all collect, we all borrow. The point is getting material that we can understand, that we can internalize and say, wow, yeah, that resonates with me. I can understand that. But the main thing is to understand that our thoughts and our words affect ourselves, and they affect our food, and they affect other people around us. You know, we could talk a little bit here, what we are, 5 minutes after the hour, a little bit of how our beliefs are formed. You know, basically, beliefs and what we start repeating in our mind comes from when we're little children and the experiences we have as little children. Little children, very little ones, they are totally authentic and they live in the present moment. They're so delightful. You watch them playing and making up stories and doing whatever. They are moment to moment to moment. But as things happen to them, unhappy things, and they're told by adults, you shouldn't do this, you behave in this way, that way, they start to draw in, and they perceive that, oh, in order to be accepted, I got to be like this, I got to do that. In time, you know, they start to change their behaviors, and they start to behave more like adults. They, you know, typically we download a lot of our parents' beliefs, and then behave accordingly, like that. So that's where it all starts, and until and unless we recognize that and decide for ourselves that, you know, that's a good belief or it's not a good belief, it's holding me back, we will continue to produce that in our life. This is why certain diseases, for instance, tend to run in families, because they tend to eat and behave in certain traditional ways. It's all very, very interesting, but it comes back to beliefs. That's who we are. That's how we behave. That's how we eat. We like this.
And so, Ron, when would you like to move on to the next key?
Sure.
So how do we implement all of these things? There's learning, cleansing, feeding, believing, and implementing.
Sure, and help me out here if you would like to go further on that. Implementing is, up to now, the learning, cleansing, feeding, and believing is, in a sense, theory, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's understanding. It's learning. You know, how does our body work? How do pharmaceutical drugs work? Do they feed the body? Well, they don't feed the body anything, but in certain times of serious illness, they will save lives, and they'll get us out of bad situations. So there are places for it. But we're talking about implementing a program to move from so-so health or even illness into good health. So we have to remain conscious. And what's that word conscious mean? It means aware. We have to remember, we have to be aware of what are the good foods, what are the bad foods. So, and tend to move away from those bad foods. So the stimulants that don't give the body anything, like caffeine, nicotine, sugar, and table salt, really are holding are bad for our body because they work against its health. Because the body perceives those as toxic items, they rev itself up to try to remove them quickly. They produce adrenaline. That's why people say, you know, oh, coffee gives me energy. Can't get going in the morning till I have my coffee. Well, that's true, but it's false energy, because what that is a toxin or a poison coming into the body that the body says, wow, we got to get that out of here. We need to increase the speed here, so it calls on the adrenal glands to pump out some adrenaline, and your metabolism is sped up. So the whole circulation goes quicker to try to process this out of the body. But in the process, more energy is produced for the time being. Over time, though, we can only stimulate a body for so long, and it ends up tiring out, becoming fatigued. Nicotine is really bad, too, because it causes and leaves very, very toxic poisons in to cause many diseases.
So, Ron, I want to ask you, we were talking about implementing now, but I would like to touch a little bit on the feeding and the leaving. They're all interconnected. I mean, this is not just a one-shot thing. We have to incorporate all of this. And so now the white poisons, the sugar, the white flour, the white rice, the things like that, salt and all of that, table salt, We know that those are not the best things for us. We know that they can cause problems in our body. Yet we also live in a society that is surrounded by, our whole social scene is around food. You can't really go anywhere. I mean, if I'm trying to eat properly, it's really hard to go to a party I'm invited to or a dinner because I know all of these unhealthy foods are going to be there. And it's going to be difficult just to, you know, not eat what everyone else is eating. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that even if we're trying to eat healthy, there are going to be times that we're going to have a piece of birthday cake. We're going to have a cup of coffee. We're going to have something that isn't the most ideal nutritional thing for our bodies. So wouldn't it be better to just say, okay, I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to enjoy it, and it's okay, because most of my diet is really healthy.
Great point. You're right on, Marie. You know, when I'm giving presentations, I have a slide with a gentleman looking at three foods, and one of them is sort of fruits and vegetables, and it says, okay, the next one, you know, has some cookies and stuff, whatever, well, maybe, and the third one is your birthday cake. And this is, well, think twice about that. However, I would say that it's not the worst thing in the world to have a piece of birthday cake. You don't need to have a third or quarter of the cake. It's not bad to have a piece of pizza, because what's pizza made out of? White flour, cheese that's been heated to a high temperature. It's very gooey, yucky, and it's meat that's been heated, and you don't know what kind of meat it is. It's probably certainly not organic. So, okay, yeah, nitrates, nitrites. Have a piece, but don't have five of them. You know, it's a matter of degree, because all the time you want to keep in mind, we talked earlier on, last session, about that we need to have our body being about 80% alkaline-producing food from foods and 20% acid-producing foods. And we need 50 to 75% raw if we can. So we need to have enough raw in our diet as well. So the main alkaline producers, we just keep this in mind. Raw fruits and vegetables are the best. Or alkalizing supplements such as the minerals of potassium, magnesium, calcium, sodium. Sodium that comes from foods, because we need good sodium. So that's a matter of being aware as we're implementing. But be sensible, too, because we need to enjoy life. Don't obsess about this stuff. If you are doing these things and you fall off the wagon the next day, yeah, get back home and do it right. Get out that blender, the Vitamix, if you've got one, which is excellent, and get back to your smoothies. And if you need to, take a good bowel product to help things move through quickly, to detoxify your body and get back on your regular diet. We do that, but we need to live and enjoy life. But even, you know, when you go out to parties and you have the smorgasbord of stuff, you can look at what's there and you can pick the better stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I tend to do now. It took me a long time to get there. Am I tempted? Sure, I'm tempted. But I know the degree to which I may have to pay for it and work hard later. So it becomes, a matter of sensibility here, of which way you want to go.
Well, I just wanted to touch on that, Ron, because I know that a lot of times people will do their best to eat healthy, and then if they have one indulgence, either they say, okay, well, it's all or nothing, so I'm either going to have no cake or I'm going to eat the whole cake. Or they beat themselves up. I mean, I hear women especially all the time, I was bad today. I had this, this, and this. And they start judging themselves and start and get so wrapped up in how negative it is. And I think part of belief is saying, you know, it's okay to have an indulgence once in a while as part of a healthy, balanced diet instead of taking that piece of cake and worrying about it and getting all obsessed, and then that just makes your body produce more toxins because you're feeling so anxious about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep in mind that we have a wonderful body, and it is so efficient. It always wants to make us well. And so if we're doing most of the things right most of the time, you know, the body has a certain tolerance level. It has a forgiveness level. So you do this. You go to the party. You do whatever. You don't eat the best stuff. The next day you get right back and help your body to recorrect again, and it'll do that. But you're absolutely right. Don't beat yourself up, because that introduces that whole thinking belief element again, which starts to restrict the energy flows. You're right on.
Excellent. Well, I just wanted to touch on that because that's, as a woman, I experience that, and I see other women and hear other women talking that way about food. Like, oh, I'm as they're eating something that's sugary or eating a cookie, they are talking about how bad it is for them, how fat they are, how they're being so bad eating it. And then it's like, well, what's the point in even eating it? You're not even enjoying it. You're just talking about how awful it is.
That's true. Very true. You know, the longer you are on a nutritious diet with enough food raw, and I can't overemphasize the value of, for instance, green smoothies that you learn to make, and have one or two of those a day, your body just loves you for it. Thanks it up. It's all energy that it can use. You know, you make green smoothie with some green raw green stuff in there, like could be spinach, could be kale. Kale's one of the best. You put a banana in for smoothness. You can put in some blueberries. You start with water, or you can put some orange juice in there. You can put some hemp seeds. That's the hulled hemp seeds in there. Beat those up in. Wonderful nutrition in there. You can put some protein powder in there. Again, get one that's low heat processed. And you mix that up. That is absolutely all food for the body that it can use. It's got the greens that's been moved up, and it's got the proteins. You put a little oil in there, like you can put some olive oil, hemp oil, flax oil in there. You're getting all these wonderful, all the nutrients, the minerals, the proteins, the vitamins, the phytonutrients that your body needs, and it just drinks those up. Just total nutrition. So even if you're doing that once a day, and it's not hard to make, you can make it quickly, and it's just so wonderful for the body. So when you're doing these things, you know, you can stray a little. But the more you do these things, as I was starting to say, you know, your tastes actually change. In the north here, during the winter, we do a lot of curling on ice rinks. And I was noticing this last weekend, I was at a little bit of a club tournament. And they have their snacks. Well, their snacks were coffee. They didn't even have any tea that I saw. And what were the eating snacks? They were these glazed donuts. You know, as I walked by those, it didn't even tempt me. Now, years ago, I'd have gone in there and gobbled them. Number one, I know it's not good, but number two, I don't even want them now, because your tastes will actually change as your body cleans out. It takes on a different sort of an energy and a mental attitude for you. Very interesting.
And Ron, it's interesting that you point that out, because when you're eating healthy and then you indulge in something like the donut, you actually feel the difference, because if you're always eating unhealthy, you're kind of used to feeling blah all the time. But when you're eating healthy and you're feeling good, you have some of those donuts, you actually notice the difference that it has on your body and your energy levels.
Well, you do, because your body talks to you. You know, I've got a whole chapter in my book that says your body talks to you. So that when you take that into your body, you start feeling yucky, you start feeling plugged up. And what is that? That's your body talking to you and saying, hey, you know, I don't really like this stuff. It's not good for me. Therefore, it's not good for you. And the more you become tuned in to listen to what your body is saying, the more you are then able to cooperate with your body and enjoy doing it. You know, for instance, what's a simple start we can take to get started towards better health? What an excellent thing to do is when you get up in the morning, you have one or two glasses of water with the juice of a fresh lemon in there. Don't buy the stuff that's in the green bottle. That's reconstituted, totally dead, totally acid. Lemon juice squeezed out of a fresh lemon is actually acidic, but it has a wonderful alkalizing residue that it leaves in the body. And so it's full of electrical energy, but it has a wonderful cleansing effect as it goes through your stomach and down through your intestines. So it's an excellent thing to start the morning with. Evidently, in one section of my book, I talk about how lemons are very unique fruit. That their electrons spin in an opposite direction. They throw off a lot of energy, which the liver loves.
Mm.
Number two, get into the green smoothies, and I tell you about how to do that in the book. Another thing we can do, summer or winter, is use fresh sprouts, bean sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, mung bean sprouts, those sort of things. You can buy them at a health food store or some food bars, but you can also make them yourself in the winter, and you can have these green, nutritious foods all winter. And the other thing we really didn't get into very much is when we are eating cooked food, you know, use digestive enzymes with it. We always have three or four digestive enzymes when we're eating a cooked food. And in the winter, you know, we need a certain amount of that for heat. So the digestive enzymes, the older we get, we need them to help to break the food down and to start that digestion process going for us.
So are you talking, Ron, about buying a supplement?
Yes, I am. Yes, and I do that. Definitely, I do. I believe that there are certain supplements. As we get older, for instance, we get into our late 50s, into our 60s, we are actually producing less digestive enzymes in our stomach, and right from our saliva contains far less enzymes in it than a 25-year-old. And also, for digestion in the stomach, we're only producing up to about one-third of the stomach acid. And that is needed to break down the proteins in our stomach. So depending on what your body is telling you, you know, you may need those. But the basic ones that I use digestive enzymes consistently when I'm eating cooked food. And also when you take digestive enzymes on an empty stomach, that does a wonderful cleaning job, goes right into the blood through the whole circulation system. So that's, to me, a very, very basic food. I talk a lot about that in the book. Number two, I like to use a good protein powder, which I talk briefly about it in the book, but a low-heat processed protein powder, and I use that in the green smoothies because your body structure is built on protein, and that doesn't mean a well-cooked steak because, again, the amino acids are frozen. So that's the second second supplement that I use. The third main one I use is a good flora product, and I use one called Herb Cocktail, which comes from a networking company. And there is
like the acidophilus, the healthy bacteria.
The acidophilus healthy bacteria is a fourth one. That is a probiotic. I was talking about a product that contains herbs and fiber in it that helps our colon sweep itself clean and keep clean on a regular basis. Stops us from forming those diverticular pockets, and if they're there over time, we'll clear them out. So those are basically the four ones. Yes, I thank you for bringing up the probiotic. Very important. That replenishes the healthy bacteria in our colon that actually manufactures nutrients in there. It's part of our immune system, actually, to keep the unhealthy ones like candida in check. So the older we get, I believe
Sorry, go ahead.
We need some of that.
And so, Ron, we're just about out of time, and I want to talk about what we're going to be discussing next week. But before we do that, I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to add for today.
Not really. We've had a really pretty good discussion. I would just say that, you know, if listeners would like to learn more about what I have to say, they could go to my website, which is conscioushealth.ca, and they want to know more about the book. That will take them directly into the Namaste site on that book page. But I also have several articles that are in there. I talk about some supplements that I do recommend, but that's not my purpose of this call. Anyhow, there's more information for me on there, from me on there.
Okay, great. ConsciousHealth.ca. And now, Ron, next week we're going to be talking about some research that you've been doing and some research that some doctors and other people have been doing.
Yes, I am. I want to get into talk about some wonderful work done by Dr. Jerry Tennant. He's actually from Texas, and it's on. He understands electricity in the body and the effects that it does have on how we can use it for healing. And he eventually gets into talk about thyroid, and another doctor, Dr. Mark Starr, who talks about hyperthyroidism type 2. This is stuff that I learned about just very recently. And then the third person I want to talk about, and this actually is in my book, is how we in the West have understood breathing incorrectly. And this is research out of Russia, a doctor who has now died, Dr. Buteyko, that on the importance of carbon dioxide, if we don't retain enough carbon dioxide in our system through breathing, the oxygen can't get out to our tissues. So it's very interesting material. I found it exciting to learn and talk about.
So that sounds kind of like hyperventilation.
Well, when you hyperventilate, you're taking a lot of oxygen into your system, but you're also getting rid of a lot of carbon dioxide. It's a temporary thing.
Because you, when you hyperventilate, you usually put a bag over your face so that you get enough carbon dioxide.
Okay, that kind of hyperventilation. Yes, that's true. One of the antidotes for people, it doesn't always work, but I saw it done by a doctor one time when I was teaching in my early career. I was teaching physical education. One of the young boys, about 14, all of a sudden his heart went into palpitations, and you could see his chest going brrr. Well, the doctor was called, and he came in quickly, and this poor kid was just lying on the bleachers, and so he took a plastic bag and he had him breathe into the bag, and in time then it slowed right down. It slowed the rhythm down, put the electrical frequency of his heart back into place. That is one aspect. But what I'm talking about most is being healthy by ensuring that we breathe correctly, and that's not breathing deeper on a regular basis, but that we breathe through our nose at all times. Only breathe through your mouth when you're really running hard or climbing hard, because what this stuff does is retain enough carbon dioxide in the system to maximize the oxygen that is then transported out to cells.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like we're going to have another awesome discussion next week.
Well, I hope we do.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ron, for being on the show.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thanks. Have a great day. So that was Ron Garner. He is the author of Conscious Health. And if you would like more information on his book and his articles, you can go to his website, conscioushealth.ca. We'll be back with more Namaste Radio next week, another discussion with Ron Garner. And I hope you are very well. Take care. Namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend. Favorite the show and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.